Welcome to Ekatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Okay, today we're diving into a book that works on, well, two totally different levels. It's this amazing journey into childhood imagination, but it's also a surprisingly sharp, almost cynical look at the adult world. We're unpacking Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, and right away, you bump into this fascinating split, this duality, really, in the author himself.
That duality is absolutely key, I think. The world knows Lewis Carroll, the genius behind all this wonderful nonsense, but the man himself, Charles Lutwidge Dodgson. He was this quite reserved, brilliant Oxford mathematician, a specialist in symbolic logic, no less.
Right, logic.
Exactly. So think about that mind, trained to define everything, to prove every single proposition, deciding to build a whole universe where nothing makes sense, where logic just goes out the window. That clash, that's where Alice gets its unique spark, its tension.
And that tension really sets up what we want to do today. We want to explore how this story, which almost feels like it happened by accident, became such a, well, a revolutionary departure from the usual Victorian children's books, you know, the ones that were so heavy-handed with morals, and why it still feels so relevant as this deep dive into identity and the sheer absurdity of authority figures.
Yeah, to really get how rebellious it was, you have to picture the time. Victorian kids' books, they weren't really meant to be fun. They were tools. Seriously. Every page, every picture was hammering home lessons about being good, obedient, pious, just relentless moralizing.
And Dodgson just sidestepped all of that.
The origin story is pretty famous, isn't it? That boat trip on the Thames in 1862.
The one with the Liddell sisters, yeah. Alice Liddell being the main inspiration. He wasn't giving them a lecture. He was giving them an escape.
Pure, simple entertainment. Exactly. Just fun. And the manuscript that came out of it, Alice's Adventures Underground, which then became the book in 1865, it was just pure imagination. No neat little moral tied up with a bow at the end. If there's a lesson, maybe it's that the adult world is fundamentally, well, ridiculous.
Uh-huh. Yes. And we start with Alice herself feeling exactly how maybe you feel when faced with something really dry. She's bored, drowsy and profoundly bored, actually, by her sister's book. Why? Because it had no pictures or conversations in it. The ultimate sign of boring adult stuff.
And that boredom is what kicks everything off. Then poof, the white rabbit talking to himself, checking a pocket watch, wearing a waistcoat.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I shall be too late.
He's the perfect little symbol of that rushed, stressed out Victorian adult, isn't he?
Totally. And Alice, she just follows him down the rabbit hole. Yeah. Here, simple curiosity takes over. That fall down the hole.
Yeah.
It's slow, dreamlike, floating past cupboards and bookshelves. It immediately signals we're not in Kansas anymore. We're in a world running on dream logic. Or maybe anti-logic. This is where Dodgson and the mathematicians having some fun, you feel. Mm-hmm. Showing you what happens when all the rules, maths, social norms just stop applying.
Precisely. The core conflict isn't your typical good versus evil thing. It's Alice, right? This proper little Victorian girl trying so hard to make sense of a world that actively resists making sense. Her whole journey is really inside her own head. It mirrors that, you know, chaotic feeling of growing up when everything you thought were solid suddenly seems wobbly.
And that wobbliness hits her physically first. The incredibly frustrating hall of doors and the constant shrinking and growing.
Oh, absolutely. It's terrifying, that physical instability. It makes her psychological confusion totally visible. She drinks the drink me potion. She shrinks, eats the eat me cake. She shoots up. She's never the right size for anything. She even cries a whole pool of tears she almost drowns in later. Think about that as a metaphor for being a teenager. Your feelings are overwhelming. You can't escape them. Your own body feels strange.
And all this physical chaos leads right to that central question, the one everyone in Wonderland keeps throwing at her.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you? It just strips away everything, her manners, her family, her place in society. Who is she, really? And she thinks it herself, doesn't she? Who in the world am I? Ah, that's the great puzzle.
Which brings us to the caterpillar. He really forces the issue.
Right. Sitting on his mushroom, smoking a hookah. Very imposing.
And quite rude.
Yeah.
Demanding. He's like the cynical gatekeeper. He basically says, you can't pass until you tell me who you are. And Alice, she stumbles. She admits she keeps changing. She doesn't know. She fails his test.
But he does give her something crucial, doesn't he? The mushroom. The pieces that let her control her size.
Yes. It's the first time she gets a bit of control back over that physical mayhem. It's like an intellectual tool he gives her, not a moral lesson.
So if the caterpillar is this sort of tough, confusing interrogator, what about the Cheshire Cat?
The cat. He's something else entirely. The ultimate philosophical trickster, maybe, grinning, fading in and out. He represents how wisdom itself can be slippery, hard to grasp.
And he delivers that iconic line, the thesis statement for the whole place. We're all mad here.
Exactly. And that line, it's like a release valve. It suggests that maybe, just maybe, if the real world is built on rules that are random and often cruel, then embracing absurdity, embracing madness is actually a kind of freedom.
Freedom from those rigid Victorian social codes.
Precisely. Which makes those famous scenes like the Mad Tea Party such brilliant social satire.
Oh, the Tea Party. It's the perfect picture of a ritual gone completely wrong.
Totally. The Hatter, the March Hare, the Dormouse, they're stuck. It's always 6 o'clock, always tea time. It's not just random chaos. It's taking that very proper Victorian ritual of afternoon tea and twisting it into knots.
The conversation makes no sense. They change topics constantly. The riddles are just meant to baffle you.
Like the famous one, why is a raven like a writing desk? It's frustrating because it's pointless. Carol even admitted later there was no answer. The whole point was that the conversation itself was empty. A perfect jab at those stuffy, meaningless social conventions of the adult world.
Okay, so the Tea Party skewers social norms. What about the Queen of Hearts? She feels like a different kind of critique.
Oh, she's the ultimate takedown of authority. She isn't complex. She's just raw, arbitrary anger, pure fury.
Ruling by fear.
Completely. Her motivation is just absolute power, and her solution to everything, off with their head. It perfectly captures how irrational and scary that kind of unchecked power looks, especially through a child's eyes, a child who just understands basic fairness.
And that croquet game.
Right.
Visually, it sums up her whole kingdom.
It's brilliant, isn't it? The game you literally cannot play. Using live flamingos for mallets, hedgehogs for balls, card soldiers bending over for wickets.
Everything is alive and moving.
Exactly. The equipment runs off, the rules change constantly, and looming over it all is the threat of execution. It's a satire of any system, political, legal, whatever, where the rules keep changing based on the whims of whoever's in charge. Makes it impossible to actually follow them.
That kind of systemic craziness really peaks at the climax, doesn't it? The trial of the Knave of Hearts, accused of stealing tarts. It's just a complete farce.
It truly is. The king's a bumbling judge. The jury's easily confused. The witnesses, including the Mad Hatter, are totally unreliable. Carroll's really holding up the legal system of his time and saying, look how easily this can descend into nonsense when it's driven by fear and incompetence.
And then there's that unforgettable line from the queen to the jury.
Sentence first, verdict afterward.
Chilling, really.
It completely flips the whole idea of justice, doesn't it? It's the logical endpoint of arbitrary rule. If decisions are based on feelings, not facts, then, yeah, the outcome's already decided before you even look at the evidence.
But it's precisely this chaos, this breakdown of the system, that allows Alice to finally find her footing. Her physical growth during the trial, she's back to her normal size. It matches her growing confidence, her moral courage.
Yes, she's not scared anymore. She's not intimidated by the whole ridiculous performance.
She becomes the voice of sanity in the asylum, basically.
She really does. When they call her as a witness, she just rejects the whole thing, stands up to the queen, looks at them all, and says, with total certainty, you're nothing but a pack of cards.
Boom. That's her moment of triumph. It's an intellectual win. Yeah. She sees through the illusion of their power.
She calls their bluff, reduces the terrifying queen and her court back to what they are, just pieces of cardboard. And then, of course, the cards attack.
And she wakes up. Back on the riverbank, the whole thing was a dream.
But the dream framing doesn't take away its power, does it? It just makes the critique safer, maybe. When you step back and think about the big themes, you see how much the book is about language itself.
Absolutely. Carol, the logician, playing with words, mm-hmm. puns, paradoxes, showing how language, the thing we use to create order, can also be used to confuse, to obscure, to control. Words in Wonderland hardly ever mean what Alice expects them to mean.
And maybe most importantly, the book lasts because it celebrates curiosity. Alice's drive to know, to understand, that's what pushes her forward. Following the rabbit, questioning the madness, finally standing up to the queen. That's how she grows up, in a way. From passive and bored to active and self-assured.
So Alice's Adventures in Wonderland really champions that fierce intelligence kids have.
Yeah.
It tells us that, you know, questioning the silly rules, even the scary rules of the world around us, that's how we find truth. That's how we find freedom, even when things feel completely absurd.
Yeah, maybe it suggests that embracing a little bit of that madness, that willingness to see the absurdity in supposedly logical systems, is actually the sanest thing you can do. It helps you keep your balance in a world that often doesn't make much sense.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.